This is Phil Farron. Sorry, I hit the recorder again. And I am driving home. I'm actually not driving home because they're having a volunteer thing at the church tonight. And so I'm just going to go drive around the cemetery for a little bit here. And then we'll go back in for the volunteer thing for a few minutes. And then I will run home to do some writing. So it's been a good week. Been a busy week. Things to deal with. Some mistakes to correct. Hate it when that happens, but you know what? Sometimes it happens. And then you just have to kind of dig yourself out. But we were able to harvest all of our end of month stuff today, which is actually a little early, which is fun. Because the fact that it's a little early means that the few things that we put in place to help with processing are working. And so we are actually able to get to things and get them done a little faster, which is good because normally it's the second or third day, business day, after we close the month. So that's good. Had some interesting meetings this week, trying to decide kind of vision and philosophy for the future, and just had one this afternoon. It's very fascinating, really, really fascinating meeting. And we had a lot of good discussions. I don't think we really decided anything, but that's okay. At least we got the stuff out there in discussion, and everyone seemed to understand what others were saying for the most part. And kind of realize that everyone's just kind of trying to do the best job they can do here, but sometimes there are, you know, competing interests. And it's interesting because this is not a unique problem for this particular business, but there's always the issue in business of this is a felt need. How do we accomplish this need? And it's always easier to imagine that someone else can accomplish this need for us. And then, you know, sometimes that person will actually try to do it just because they're trying to help out. But then over time, it grows. And then you get looking at things and it's like, so why are they doing this? Because nothing in the policy says they're supposed to do this. So, you know. It's very interesting. So, but we had some really good discussions and we talked our way kind of through what was happening and maybe how we had gotten to this point. And we haven't decided anything yet, but I think it's a good starting place. So it's good. It's good. The writing is just fine. I finished up the rough draft for book 17, so I'm going through now and I'm starting to do the final read through before it goes to beta, and that seems to be going fine. Sometimes when I start that final read through, it's like, oh, this isn't starting off right, and then I have to go rework a bunch of stuff, but not here. I will be peeling stuff out because I have a tendency to get verbose when I'm, you know, just writing like crazy, and so sometimes I just go through and pull out whole paragraphs and kind of change approach a little bit. But so far, that hasn't been bad. I'm almost 100 pages. I think I'm at page 80. I'm at page 80 into the read-through. And there's only about 450 pages, I think. No? Yeah. Maybe a little more. And so that's all going fine. I'm on target for that. I'll make a dent in it. I will make a dent in it this weekend. And then I still got to really hop on figuring out what in the world I'm going to do for costumes for the kids. And what is that cover going to look like? I've got to get that all figured out. And we'll go from there. But all in all, I think it's fine. I think it's fine. It accomplishes what it needs to accomplish. And I think it says what it needs to say. So, yay, good. Last week for costumes, it was Poodle Day. That's always fun. People seem to enjoy that. and I kind of took a week off because we had to move furniture around and we had to get some things squared away because we've got small groups starting up here in just a couple of weeks. So we had to get that all under control. But that's all under control now. And so as of three nights ago, I kind of officially, it was last weekend, I started ironing. This particular outfit is kind of based on, it's a base layer that I just purchased. And it happened to be something that was, you know, stuffed down in a bag, which means when it came out of the bag, it was seriously wrinkled. And I spent just a couple hours in the evening, but still, I spent 3 or 4 days ironing this thing to get it back to the place that it was passable. So yeah, that was fun. For a while there, I thought I was going to have to iron it for an entire week before I got it together where it was passable, but it wasn't a week. It was only like 3 or 4 days. And I still don't know exactly what I'm doing with this one. This is for Pink Ribbon Day, and I have an agreement with my wife that I'll just get it, you know, kind of set up, and then I'll throw it on, and she can look at me, and she can give me first right of refusal on it, and we can go for that. I will give her first right of refusal on it, I should say, and we'll just go from there. I think it'll be fine. But honestly, if she says, yeah, no, then I'll just not wear it. So it's fine because I'm not hugely emotionally committed to any of these things. If I think something's going to make them laugh, people laugh, fine and dandy. So that's all good. So work is good. Writing is good. Costumes are good. I came across a couple of different things that I thought I would just kind of meld together today and chat about a little bit, because I had mentioned, I think multiple times, that all this concern about climate change, what I hear people saying from climate change, is that, we just have to make this change because in 100 years, X is going to happen, or in 50 years, X is going to happen. I really don't care what the number of that is on there, unless you're telling me that the whole world is going to burn up next month. If you're 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years down the road, the assumption that you're making is that technology will remain the same for that entire span of time, which of course is not true. And if you go from that mindset, what you're going to end up doing is you're going to believe that, oh, we have to make a change right now. And then the people who get religious and who get zealous about making a change right now, that's the only thing they see. We got to make a change right now. We have to go to renewables right now. And no one ever bothers to put pen to paper and start doing the math. So California is a great example of this. So in California, they decide not going to allow any cars to be sold. No cars are going to be sold in the future. And by, I think it's what, 2036, we're not going to allow any cars except electric cars to be sold by 2036. Now, they're not going to ban the other cars. They haven't done that yet, but that wouldn't surprise me if they did that. And it seems like no one has actually put pen to paper and used a calculator and figured out, okay, what is this going to do? Well, if everybody has electric cars, the only way they'll be able to drive them is if they can charge them. But California is also suffering from an energy crisis and telling people, yeah, don't make sure that you don't use you know, your dryers and your air conditioning from like 2 to 4, 9 and blah, blah, blah. And so at the same time, they're telling everybody you have to get electric cars. They're dealing with the fact they don't have enough electricity. And I saw one estimate that if somehow electric cars became really popular, that California would need like 168% of the current energy that they have. Well, where's that going to come from? And apparently the answer is nobody knows, but it's okay because people just won't drive then. So it's like, what? As a consultant who deals with moderately, not even moderately, slightly complex systems. As a consultant who deals with slightly complex systems, and I see people just bloviating on these things and not even attempting to identify the complexities involved, I just go, man, what in the world? Somebody really needs to do a better job of this. Because you're not even paying attention to all the things that are going to bite you when you try to do this. And then it's all going to be a big shock. Well, it's not a big shock, and it's not a big surprise. Okay, no matter what you think about Trump, the fact was 4 years ago, he gave a speech. I think it was at the UN, someplace, where there was a delegation from Germany there and from different delegations for Europe, and he told them, if you rely on Russia for your natural gas, for your energy supplies, you are going to be in a world of hurt. They're in a world of hurt now. And at the time, they just scoffed and laughed at him. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, maybe that was a lucky guess. I'm not going to say that Trump had some special knowledge from God on this. But maybe he had some advisors that could see the handwriting on the wall. It's not important who said it. It's important to realize this was a fairly obvious result. And the reason it's a fairly obvious result is because if you buy all your energy from an unstable country, that country is going to become even more unstable at some point. And then what are you going to do? And there are reports coming out. So I was watching this one report that they were commenting on the fact that just a year ago, Europe was a modern place. Most of the Europeans filled their home with natural gas. Only about 6% heated their homes with wood. But now wood is like the new thing that people are going to use to heat their homes because they won't be able to get natural gas. And Germans are going out scouring the hillside, trying to find firewood. They featured this one little town that are actually going out and cutting down trees and chipping them all up to make wood pulp because they've got this furnace that they can burn wood pulp in, and they're going to pipe it around to their 60 inhabitants, their little village of 60 people. They're going to pipe the heat from that over there. They said France had so much energy that they were a net exporter of energy. No longer. They were talking about the fact that last Monday, the cost for something benchmark for electricity was 1,000 euros for so many kilowatts of hours, was 1,000 euros, which was the highest it had ever been. And just last week, it was 700, which was the highest it had ever been. So in other words, the price was rising close to 50% in 1 week. I said in France, in one day last week, energy prices went up 25%. Okay, what? And a lot of this is just because everybody was saying, oh, we got to do the Green New Deal. We can't, you know. And the people who were discussing this rightly pointed out that if they really felt like that climate change was an existential threat, they would all stop flying their private jets. And we would just ground private jets, because private jets are one of the huge polluters with carbon emissions. But lo and behold, nobody is stopping flying their private jets. All the people that are browbeating us over climate change are still flying around everywhere in their private jets. So in other words, climate change is a problem and you should do something about it, but I'm not going to bother with it. So, you know, now what's interesting is this article or this discussion also pointed out the fact that Russia has so much excess natural gas at this point that they are burning it off. They showed a picture of it being burned off, and the estimates are they are burning off $10 million worth of natural gas every day, because they've got so much excess natural gas. They're selling as much as they want to. None of that stuff worked to cripple them. And they're just burning off the rest. And what was the media coverage on that? Scientists are concerned about the large carbon dioxide exacerbated by, you know, so the people are worried about the fact that that burning off the natural gas that could have been used to heat the homes of the people in Europe, well, that causes carbon dioxide to be released. I mean, you can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. You know, you can just... But this myopic, all we're going to do is look at this one thing. All we're going to do is look at this one thing, and we're just going to keep pounding on that, and we're not going to factor it into anything else that's going on. That's either myopic or it's religious zealotry, or there's something more nefarious going on, because none of this makes sense from a common sense viewpoint. So I've said in the past, as I started off saying, all this concern about climate change assumes there will be no technological innovations. Well, I think it was just this week or last week. Maybe I just got to the article lately. So developers at Purdue University developed a white paint, that reflects 98.1% of sunlight. A new coat of paint is an easy way to freshen up your home's curb appeal, but it also may soon keep your house home. Cool. Researchers at Purdue University have developed an ultra-white paint that reflects 98.1% of sunlight and can keep surfaces up to 19 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than their ambient surroundings. This new paint, which may become available for purchase in the next year or two, this article was written in 2021, could help someday combat global warming and reduce our reliance on air conditioners. Now, they went on to say that during the day, that it only reduces it about 8% cooler than the surrounding temperature, but that's 8 degrees cooler, but that's still 8 degrees. It's reducing it 8 degrees, 19 degrees in the evening. So this ultra-white paint, which researchers say is the coolest on record, reflects nearly all of the sun's rays and sends infrared heat away from the surface, providing an average cooling power of 113 watts per square meter. If painted onto a roof of a 1,000 square foot home, That translates to a cooling power of 10 kilowatts, which is more powerful than most residential air conditioners. In other words, by reflecting this heat and sunlight, you can paint a roof. You can paint a roof, and it will save you as much electricity, it will save you as much energy as it takes to cool a home. Well, this seems like a pretty good innovation. They said, in tests conducted during sunny midday hours on the roof of a campus building in West Lafayette, the paint kept outdoor surfaces 8 degrees cooler than ambient temperatures, and at night the paint kept surfaces 19 degrees cooler. You know. The researchers went on to say, air conditioners can cool your house, but they move the heat from inside the house to outside. The heat is still in the city, it's still on Earth in our air. So even if you don't care about power bills you pay, it's going to warm up the Earth anyways. Our paint does not use any power at all, but more importantly, it sends the heat into space. The heat doesn't stay on the Earth, so that really helps the Earth to cool down and can stop the warming trend. Using statistical modeling, the researchers estimated that their ultra-white paint could reduce air conditioning use up to 70% in hot cities like Reno, Nevada, and Phoenix, Arizona. In a rather extreme model, they also found that covering 0.5 to 1% of the Earth's surface, buildings, roads, unused land, would just about everything with ultra-white paint would be enough to stop the global warming trend. To stop it. Now, that's 0.5% to 1% of the Earth's surface. That's a lot. But there's no energy expended. They finished up by saying, this is a whole different ballpark of cooling, which is very exciting. It's hopeful. This kind of things that we all hope scientists and researchers will help us discover opportunities that we didn't know existed for how to live more sustainably. This is precisely what I'm talking about. You didn't even know that was a possibility for a solution. And yet, researchers, they try an idea, they get a whisper maybe, try an idea, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, look at that. Meanwhile, we've got people that are banging their drums and stomping around and saying we have to cut this and cut that and cut this. And all that's going to do is increase the amount of suffering in the world. And frankly, all it's going to do is increase the amount of carbon emissions, because burning wood is the worst. I think burning wood is even worse than burning coal. And so we can go to a fallback position where we're just burning everything we get our hands on because we don't want to freeze to death and think that we've done something great for the planet, because now we're forcing everybody to use renewables even though there isn't enough renewable energy. But we're going to do it anyways, and then we're going to make people fall back on something that's worse, or we're not going to use something that would work quite well because we're afraid, i.e. nuclear fission, i.e. thorium, or, you know, we can just get clever. And I just have no doubt that if we will just get quiet and we will just listen, Jesus will talk to us and we'll get clever and we'll come up with solutions. I haven't made it home yet, so I'm not technically driving home today. But I am going to loop around, go back to the volunteer banquet for a while at church. In the meantime, I'm going to drop in to the little convenience store and I'm going to get some mixed nuts. So that is the next stop in my agenda. This is Phil Ferrand. Let me get parked here first, and then I'll power this down. But I hope you all have a great, great weekend. Tomorrow is Labor Day weekend, and so we're putting on the muscle suit, dressing up in Rosie the Riveter tanked up, and we're going in to see what kind of a reaction we can get from this. It's been fun. Anyways, have a great weekend.